Hey everyone, this is Stephen from Phase One Trading, and welcome to another episode of P1 Talks. This is episode 11 for us. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, you know the drill, like and subscribe to our YouTube channel and set reminders if you find our content helpful. You can follow us on Twitter as well under the handle at Phase One Trading and search the show using hashtag P1 Talks to get up-to-date insights from our trading community. Once again, that's at Phase One Trading. You can also visit us at phaseonetrading.com for more info about our community. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. No one speaking tonight is a licensed financial advisor. I'm excited tonight to have a very experienced trader with us. You may know him as Alex Cutler 247 on Twitter and YouTube. Data analyst, trader, and veteran, Alex Cutler. Alex, thanks for being here with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I'm excited just to talk about a lot of things. I want to get to know you, but I want to dive a little bit into your background first. Can you tell us just how long have you been trading? What got you started in investment and trading?
Well, I've always been really very very interested into mathematics and data analytics since I was very young, like 10, 11 years old. And my background, I am a data analyst as well as a meteorologist for the military, and that really translated well into investing and trading. I started trading 3.5 years ago, and I was day trading because of obviously me being in the military. I really didn't have that much time on my hands, so to try to continually focus on investments really wasn't working out for my style. And right. So I dabbled into day trading, and obviously as day traders go, you kind of learn on your first year, and you have some successes, but you also have a lot of learning experiences or losses. Yeah. But then drawing a lot more success after that first year, and the proof is in the pudding. It's been very great last 2.5 years and growing substantially and taking care of my family. And now I can educate retail investors and provide them a way of investing stress-free for their everyday lives, because I came from a day trading to now investing because I kind of flip-flopped. I'm so busy now as a family man that I can't look at everything, but right. I'm all about educating myself and educating my investors, my followers, to invest into something that's safe and has great growth aspects. So
And like you were saying, you know, your trading style kind of has to reflect your lifestyle in a way. Like if you're not able to babysit stocks, you know, you kind of need to take a different approach to time frames in terms of how you're taking trades. But I wanted to ask you, in terms of mentorship, do you have anybody that kind of helped you get to where you are today? And do you go to anybody for guidance if you still need it?
I overall just, I rely on my peers to kind of like keep myself humble and make myself learn overall as a past, because even though I have a large following, I grew very substantially quickly. Yeah. I do believe that, you could always learn from not only experiences, but from each other. So from the likes of, Yates Investing to Rock Trading, to King Street Trading, the whole group on Discord, from King Blammy and everyone in that whole group, I've learned so much from not just day trading setups, but as well as options trading. Options trading is something I still continue to learn from. And I think that we just have to not let our egos get the best of us and just learn. No matter what, if you're making $1,000 to $100,000, you're always learning something. So.
Yeah. And it's also about keeping it in perspective, because, and we'll probably touch on this in a little bit, just because like people don't have the same kind of weight in their accounts. So, you know, you're dependent on what kind of, you know, liquidity you have really affects your strategy. So it's, but I also agree with you. I think, and this is what we love about doing these interviews, is just kind of increasing our network in the retail trading community. It really does kind of keep you in check. And I agree, ego is, it's probably the most destructive, I think, aspect, at least to me, for trading, when my ego starts to get a little bit out of control and I just I'm not listening to anybody else in the group. That's when I usually know I'm in for a bad ride. So that's interesting. But before we go any further, like into stocks or anything, I just wanted to ask you really quick about your service. I noticed you're a veteran.
Yes. I served 9.5 years, almost 10 years in the military for the Marine Corps. And I was a data analyst and meteorologist. And I was specific forecasting, pinpoint forecasting for ground operations and aviation operations. So I enjoyed my time there and made me learn how to actually basically very, very translatable for the investing perspective. Initializing and verifying data for projections and trend patterns of weather setups. So it was very good. It was always satisfying to pinpoint and accurately forecast weather. A lot different than the likes of what you see on what on the Weather Channel. So I love what I was doing, and I still do the exact same thing I do today in the civilian world, along with investing.
So meteorology is still your, I guess, full-time gig.
Yeah, it's my full-time job right now. It's kind of keeps my sanity because I don't I need to do something that keeps my mind off of looking at my screen all the time. It's more for sanity purposes. It's not the fact that I need to do it. It's more of the fact that it just keeps myself humble and just makes me so makes me it takes myself away from the computer screen.
That's it's so interesting you say this, and I'm actually not going to name names, but there's a couple guys on our management team that are, have either retired or getting close to leaving work, but we talk about this privately all the time. It's like, you should totally just retire. And then it's like, no, I'm fine just kind of having a regular schedule with benefits and, just knowing that a paycheck is coming in no matter what. And also just kind of, it does, like you said, it does keep you humble. And there is something to be said about screen time in this game now, because it can get really excessive between social media, exposure and just staring at charts. With multiple, I know people, do you have like a crazy setup with multiple screens?
Yeah, I have, well, not crazy setup. I have three screens running all 4K Samsung, and then I have obviously my microphone, my MacBook, and that I don't go crazy. I don't have like six screens, but I have that. I have my phone. It's great. I don't need to have everything up the whole time. I have specific setups, and it's done me very well.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm still rocking a laptop and just one big 127 inch, but I'll get there. Before I go any further, Alex, just wanted to say thank you for your service. That's 9 years, so thank you very much for that.
No problem. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, man.
Okay, I want to kind of dive into social media engagement because this has been kind of an ongoing topic for us at Phase One in terms of our management team. And in my personal experience, as we've grown, we're having more conversations around responsibility in terms of how we communicate with our private members, but also just the broader public audience. And I think our intention is to provide information. I believe our intention is to provide information that, helps people make money, but we're wary of misleading people at the same time. And I know, at the end of the day, every trader has to take responsibility for their own actions. But and like I said earlier, no one's trading with the same amount of, cash. So everybody's goals are, in terms of risk tolerance are varied. So I guess what I'm getting at is, Alex, is when it comes to social media, as your visibility has grown, has anything changed in terms of your approach to communicating with the public, like broader
Yeah,
audience?
it has. And initially, when I was on Twitter and I was growing overall, I was day trading, and I was a part of a group and that focused on day trading. And that, like at the beginning, people were making profits. We were making profits. People were making $100, making $1,000 here and there. And but the thing is that not everyone was profiting. The small amount of group of people were profiting, and they were making profits, making decent amount of profits per their portfolio percentage wise. But the other percentage was a larger chunk of people that were losing money, putting themselves into bad situations. And I realized after those first couple of months, I'm like, this is not what I want to do. I don't want to provide information that really hurts more than it does good. So I refocused and said, I want to do investing. I want to provide investing information for people to make their own decisions and not just do day trading setups. Because truthfully, in the current era that we're in at that time, after COVID was set up, people were using their own money trying to change their lives. And I think investing was the best way to do it, especially with people like the single moms, to the college kid, to the military members, to the everyday civilian person. They had their own lives and they need to invest instead of day trading and doing it inexperienced and then learning how to do day trading setups afterwards. So I think my experience from the beginning was the day trading, and now I just do investing. So I try to educate and inform them on how, what to look at, what categories to look at, and how to find real companies that have real growth aspects and perspectives that won't just die after merger closure or after earnings are happening. So I just continue to try just to give as much information as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's really helpful. You know, objective due diligence is huge, and it's very hard to come by. Obviously, there's an edge to it where you're actively investing in these, so it's hard to kind of it's hard to translate that objectivity. But I think it's easy to kind of tell. Like I actually want to dive into some EV stocks with you in a minute here, but you know, three stocks I saw on your YouTube video earlier, I think this was like just a week ago or so, where you were touching on some EV stocks. It was actually super informative to me, which is why I want to talk about them now, because I've been playing stuff that is not vertically integrated like FSR, but now you really have turned my eyes to a couple of things, so I'm excited to talk about that. I wanted to ask a couple more just personal questions in terms of your trading habits. Like I know we're kind of defining you more as an investor at this point in your career, but what's your daily routine in terms of trading and tracking the market? Like starting when you wake up, like what do you kind of do to get through the day?
First thing that I do when I open up is I open up my news and I open up my charts. And so I go on and I look at Benzinga, look at the news for the related sectors that I'm invested into and see if there's any updates. And it's not only EVs, green energy, digital fitness, all you name it. You just have to look at every single thing for the news, see if there's any updates or any changes. Right. I also go to shout out SPACtrack.net, any news for any SPAC updates, any kind of mergers that have happened, as well as Twitter. Because again, some people are up before me and I want to see if there's any news that has been passed, and that way I can do my deep dive before I get ready for the day and start moving. So that's really it. See what the movement is, see what's happening. Right now people are looking at treasury bonds and percent yields, all that, just currently just seeing how that goes.
So before you get kind of into, you know, before you turn the screens on, sometimes I find myself like, I wake up in the morning and I'm looking at futures in my bed at 3:30. So I'm just kind of curious, like, do you take a little bit of personal time for yourself before you kind of jump on, or is it just kind of wake up and get to it?
It's really just wake up and get to it. I look at my phone, wake up, I go to the bathroom, get back to my phone, let's see what's happening, get ready, and just, it's basically glued to my hip most of the time. And I'm even looking at updates while I'm driving safely, but it's just more just continuously being updated. Yeah. as everything happens and having alerts at the ready.
Do you feel like it's a healthy balance right now with you? Because I know for me, it's been like, there's been a lot of give and take with how much time I'm willing to kind of put into the market research and just keeping my eyes on things, basically.
It's really been, there's been times where it hasn't been balanced. I've had to take a step away, like a couple hours a day, to try to decompress. Specifically on the weekends, I've realized that I had to really take time to step away and not do YouTube videos or edit videos, so I could spend time with my family, kind of de-stress. Because when the market is green, when the market is good, you just want to go full out, full throttle, and get out as much information, as much videos as possible. But then you kind of miss out on the daily rituals of seeing your family, seeing your little one, your wife, your loved ones, your friends. And I think that as everyone overall, even as a day trader, you need to know when to stop trading, stop looking at the stock market and kind of balance your life overall. And I think that's every investor needs to learn.
I'll tell you, a lot of, I've probably lost some days off my life just kind of sitting around babysitting stuff that I obviously didn't have like the discipline to take an exit when I needed to. And so I think that's a big part of time suck too, is just getting a little bit tighter with your own strategy. So you're not stuck in something and just praying that it's going to be returning to where it was. So that's actually a big, big thing that I'm working on for myself this year, just to help me save time. Because I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, Alex, but like when something is, most of us have, I would imagine, but when something just goes south, not the way you want it, and you just kind of feel like you're stuck, a lot of your emotions and your psychology get caught up in that like feeling stuck mode. So, yeah.
And that's really what I say when I'm on my live streams from Clubhouse to Twitter. I've always said this, and I say the saying at the end of it. I say, when it comes to investing, don't be emotional, be analytical, and know when to get in and know when to get out. Even if you love the company, even if you really do believe in the growth perspectives, you don't want to be sitting there holding the bag. So I've always stated that, to be analytical. Don't let your heart decide. You need to let your mind decide. And if you, again, if you believe in the company, just keep it on the watch list and keep an eye on it and just watch the way that it's set up and wait for it to break out, or wait for the bottom to enter.
Yeah. Patience.
Patience is key.
Emotion and getting excited, I think. And I know you do some great due diligence yourself, but I find a lot of times when I get deep into due diligence, my emotions, my attachment to the company starts to grow, and my excitement level will sometimes exceed the logic of where the range for the trade actually is, like where a good entry exit point actually is. It's just like, oh, I just want to own this. It's like, yeah, that's not exactly the right. I mean, do you, I'm assuming you're pretty granular with charting as well before you take positions in some of these larger investments?
Yeah. Overall, my larger investments, I always look at, do chart analysis before I enter. I look at where the support levels are. And there are times where I like, every investor does technically hold a bag at times. Not every investor gets into it easily. If someone says that I perfectly time it, like you're fooling yourself, unless you're a day trader. But investors, there's times where you bought in 2 to 3% higher than where it's currently is, and it's your decision to either add on more and just be patient. It's your choice. But I think chart analysis is the bread and butter. It's not think, it is a no. You need to know this. And if you don't know chart analysis, you're really gonna cause yourself more stress than what you need.
Yeah, I definitely think it's just, you're just rolling the dice with market sentiment if you don't know how to read charts. And sometimes, even though there's great news on a company, that doesn't necessarily mean it's reflected in the price action. So it's definitely, yeah. And we're going to jump into a few things here in just a second. I actually wanted to kind of switch gears so we could jump into stocks. I mean, I've seen you mention pure play companies, and correct me if I'm off here, but my interpretation is that pure plays are just self-reliant, vertically integrated companies. Is that fairly accurate?
So like pure plays are companies that, yeah, are in a certain sector that are a product upon themselves, and they're the first to market, or one of the first to markets. So like an example of this was Velodyne Lidar and Luminar. When they came out from their SPAC, they were one of the pure plays, and Velodyne LiDAR was more of a warehouse LiDAR technology and was dabbling in automotives, where Luminar was fully dedicated for automotive LiDAR technology. And you saw how the market reacted. And with those kind of pure plays, it exploded substantially. And then another market of that was QuantumScape. That was upon, it is, can still remains the same, is it's the only solid state battery pure play out there. Other than Neo, who is still in prototype mode for their solid state. So those are the kind of things I look into for investing. That's definitely one of the categories.
Okay, cool. I actually want to pull up some charts here. I'm talking to Chris when I say that out loud. So we're going to look at some charts here in just a second related to EV. But really quick, if anybody just is tuning in with us, thanks for being here with us. If you're enjoying the show, please don't forget to like and subscribe. Alex Cutler is here with us tonight, and we're just kind of running through some stock ideas now. I'm going off of the three that you mentioned in your previous YouTube video, and just kind of want to start with CCIC, or Arrival. Mm-hmm. So something I noticed off the bat, just from the information you provided, is the microfactory tech that they've kind of got going, which is like a micro cell of robots that can just build a whole car in one spot. Is that correct?
It can do multiple vehicles in once. Okay, so this is how the microfactory rolls. Mm-hmm. With microfactory, instead of a gigafactory, there you can go into a factory that's already built out into a warehouse that's right next to disbursement centers. And there are not only one single cell, but a multiple of cells that can build out multiple different designs of vehicles that are designed specifically for those companies surrounding them, from FedEx to DHL to UPS to local companies around them. And they are built up in a quicker time for a lower CapEx and can be delivered in shorter period of time overall. So instead of paying billions of dollars for a gigafactory and waiting 9 months to a year for it to be built out, and then you have to test it and make it fully operational after that, you're waiting 5 to 7 months at worst, and you're only paying around $40 to $50 million for a microfactory that is for that area by itself. And that's what's truly is brilliant about Arrival.
Yeah, it sounds modular in by nature, but how does this stack up in terms of compared to how Tesla is currently manufacturing?
Well, again, different sectors of the EV. Tesla's focusing on the consumer, and because of them focusing on the consumer, they had to build out the gigafactory, and they had to be able to mass produce things in a quicker period of time. So that's why they had to build out the gigafactory in their gigafactory number one, that they had to build that gigafactory in Texas, as well as now in China. Those were necessary for them. And it's different in the commercial EV sector. You don't have to push out over hundreds of thousands of vehicles overall. You don't have to do that. But with the material of the exoskeleton for Arrival, for the how recyclable it is and how it's the composite, that it's a full circle. Like if something breaks, you can bring it back and they can break it down and recreate it in less than a couple hours and give you a brand new panel, and you're back to work, and you're vertically integrated overall. I think that after speaking to President Avinash and as well as their team, they have something coming, they have something going. So after the reverse merger closure, after you saw that drop, and then it's bouncing off of that one of the lowest of the supports, I think that there's a great opportunity for a long-term investment here. As we saw the initial announcement on the merger, it spiked all the way up to $37. So I think that there's a lot more way to go.
Right. I'm actually looking. I think Chris has the chart pulled up. Mm-hmm. But CCIC, for me, I was just kind of looking at it from a longer-term perspective daily. And I feel like there's a floor somewhere around 1775. I don't know if you're looking at the chart or not, but it's probably pulled up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Would you say at this moment in time right now, and maybe for perspective, Chris, if you can flip over to the 4-hour chart too, just to kind of see what the current trajectory is, do you think it would be smart at this point, Alex, just to kind of, if you're obviously speculative on this and haven't entered yet?
Well, right now, if you got to look closer an hour chart, you would see that there was a falling wedge that was positioned and occurring over the last 10 days. So it hit its foundation, its support level at 1720, and it went horizontal. And then during after hours, we had a minor break of the falling wedge. So now is the time to get in before you see a major spike, because again, this is a low float, high volatility EV sector company that can grow substantially as they gain more and more contracts overall, which they currently have a UPS contract, and the UPS is investing into them. There's more coming. I know that they're positioned internationally overall for a reason. So we're going to see major partnerships coming in a quickness.
So these are overall for Arrival. These are this is obviously not consumer. These are just for the most part. What's the heaviest? What's the most popular kind of model that they're highlighting right now?
Right now, there's two, and there's only have two products. They have the van and the bus, and the alpha product, the alpha prototype, was actually one of my favorites. But their beta is good as well, and they continue to evolve it as they speak to drivers, speak to the company that they are innovating and growing the product itself and molding it to what the driver needs. They're not just making a product and saying, here you go. No, they're changing it to what the driver specifically needs in order for them to be more efficient, be more effective as a driver, and be more comfortable. So you don't have the normal gripes and pains of a delivery man. Yeah. As everything passes. So I like the beta. The beta is the most popular thing. It was actually created in coordinates with UPS and Royal Mail. And and then the Metro bus is going to be released first in the second half of 2021.
So mail delivery service in general seems to be kind of ready to roll in terms of their model rollout. I mean, what's the time period with that?
So the time period for the Metropolitan bus will be the end of this, the second half of 2021. Mm-hmm. And then the delivery buses will be Q2 of 2022 or second half of 2022. But that's more, I think they're being more conservative than what they need to be, because they're just wanting to have the full infrastructure built out. For, like you saw, they're going to be having three microfactories built up here shortly, and two in the United States, in North Carolina and South Carolina, and one in the UK. So I think that they're going to continue to grow out and expand. And then once they're ready, they will be delivering their vans quick in a quickness.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay. Well, I definitely, this is one to watch for me as well. I'm going to move on to NGA or Lion Electric. Acquisition. So this is all electric commercial urban trucks, buses, school buses, if I'm not mistaken, paratransit and mass transit. So Chris, if you wouldn't mind pulling up the daily chart for NGA, I noticed, at least Alex, I think the range to me looks like somewhere around $22 to $14. I think Chris probably has that pulled up now. What do you think about that kind of a range in terms of entry point?
I like what I'm seeing right now. This is right at the entry level point, because the worst situation was last 2.5 weeks ago, which was like one of the perfect entry points. It is school buses, but they also have a class 6 and class 8 EV commercial trucks that they're building out, and they have major contracts with, they just have had over 100 contracts for their Lion 6 and Lion 8, but they also have an order and a contract with Amazon for over 2,500 vehicles and trucks, with at the end when that order is finalized and completed, that Amazon will have 19.99% stake of the company as it will grow and expand. NGA and Lion Electric is one of my favorite investments for the long term. And if you're going to invest in the commercial sector of EVs, you have to pair this with the three that I spoke about on YouTube. You'd be dumb not to.
Okay. I mean, and I don't know if are you watching the YouTube screen right now?
I am looking at it.
Okay. I marked this up a little bit earlier today just to kind of get your general opinion. So I'm glad we're just kind of running through this, but yeah, for me, just looking at NGA and not having a lot of background in it, and obviously now I'm building my DD as I'm talking to you live, but the buy range, just technically speaking, looked like it was somewhere sub 16 to 14 at the floor. So that's kind of what I'm looking at personally for NGA.
Yes.
So cool. Okay. Well, we agree on that. Let's move on to ACTC, which is Proterra. Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite things about this company?
The biggest thing about Proterra is, yeah, they make buses, and their buses are very impressive. And the fact that they are vertically integrated, and their technology for not only the chassis, the batteries, but the charging stations are all their own. They have this technology that when they're stopping and parking to pick up passengers, that there's a charging station that floats down and charges the battery for so odd amount of minutes. So it allows it to charge and not have to stop fully and turn off. So right. That's something that's really exciting.
So just quick charges, like as it stops its station. I think I saw this video, actually. You shared the video on yep. YouTube. If anybody's out there right now on YouTube that can get that link of Alex going over these EVs, that would be awesome to drop in the chat just so people have a reference point. But yeah, I saw that mobile kind of charge. It drops down on the top of the bus. Is that correct?
Yes, drops down and goes to the back of the bus and charges their back portion battery. And it's really exciting. And I love seeing that. And it's kind of like I'm not sure if you're following like IDX, they bought a Wave, and where it's kind of like wireless charging for your phone, but it's wireless charging for your vehicles for EVs. Having the ability of not needing to turn off your vehicle is amazing. And that's innovative. The other thing that's one of my favorites about Proterra is that they are acting as a third party OEM, and they are already selling their technology to others, from Daimler to Van Hool and many others. They build their own battery packs. They do outsource their power cells, their battery cells, but they build out the battery packs and adjust the sizes for whatever customer that they need, and they sell them. And they are one of the top battery suppliers out there, next to Microvast.
Wow. And this is obviously all part of your kind of interpretation of vertical integration. Does it start with battery supply and production? Is that kind of the bottom of the vertical stack?
Yes. If you are an EV company, you have to be vertically integrated, and it starts with batteries. If you're going to create your own battery and then you create your chassis to your exoskeleton, to your transmission, to your engine, you name it, you need to be vertically integrated, because it's going to make you more like provide more revenue and more profitability in a shorter period of time than relying on third parties. I understand that some companies have done that and they have been successful, but they have not overall grown in a shorter period of time. But you have to be patient and trust in the execution of the company. And Proterra has been doing it longer than a lot of the other commercial vehicle companies. They are already providing revenue. They've been going since 2006. So
I think, keep going. Sorry.
No. It's fine. And it's reflected in the contracts that they have with Daimler, with the universities that they have, from Duke University to Harvard to I think Colorado, you name it. They have one of the best credibilities in the commercial EV sector.
Oh, cool. I actually work at CU out here. That's my job. when you say they're working with Daimler with the tech, is that generally around, you said batteries, or is it around that kind of unique charging station that they've developed for the buses?
They're selling the batteries. Okay. Charging stations are for their vehicles and their vehicles alone. I think that they're figuring out a way to do that to support others, but no one has their charging setups on other people's buses than their own, because that's their patent.
Yeah. Do you foresee kind of, you know, if we've got a bunch of different EV companies vertically integrating with battery production, do you kind of, I'm worried, I guess, as a consumer, as a future consumer, that every vehicle company will have a different like battery technology, and it'll be very specific to their line of vehicles. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that. Do you foresee in the future, in terms of EV production, that there will be some sort of standardized like power supply somewhere along the line?
Yes. Down the line, battery technology is going to become more efficient, and there's going to be a line in which that there will be a change from lithium ion batteries to solid state batteries. And once that changes, the whole world's going to change, and the whole sector is going to be changing, because you're going to provide a battery that goes 1,000 miles, and it's not going to need these hefty, large battery packs. And it's going to be that company that's going to make it created the quickest and get it to mass production quicker. That's going to provide a lot of money. And that's why the likes of QuantumScape has increased so substantially. So,
right. Yeah. And your explanation in terms of like the value of vertical integration is really starting to make a little bit more sense to me. I mean, in terms of if you were to just, and I know these are completely different companies, they're commercial sector, but I mentioned to you before we started the show that I've been in and out of FSR. Like, what are your opinions about some of these other companies that are kind of still prospective a little bit in terms of vehicle rollouts?
So you're talking to the likes of like Fisker and GoEV, yeah, which is Canoe?
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
They have their own, they're going to be profitable in their own ways. I really want to hear Fisker like put more emphasis on building their own battery, building their own factory. I've not heard him say that. I think that he is fine with relying on Magna to create and build out his vehicles. Right. Which is slightly concerning. I want to hear a CEO state that we are building our own building our own factory. We are expanding, but I'm not hearing that from him. And I understand providing one of the most sustainable vehicles and selling an SUV that's worth around $37,000, which is great. It's a great design vehicle. I love what I'm seeing, but I want to see that emphasis, that yearning to become vertically integrated, which I'm not seeing. And to each his own, I'm not going to invest into Fisker until I see that. I do like that they are partnered with Foxconn for semiconductors and other display technologies. I do like GoEV. I do like Canoe. The best thing about it is the fact that they are one of the co-creators of the skateboard technology that's being utilized by Hyundai. So Hyundai and Kia co-created the skateboard technology for what they're seeing on their vehicles. I don't love the design. I think that they're going to make most of the money from the multi-purpose van. Mm-hmm. I don't like the truck. It looks ridiculous. I think they're going a little bit too far for futuristic, but it's promising, but it's 8 to 9 bucks right now. I don't think that you can really go any lower right now.
Mm, yeah. Well, that goes for a lot of stuff after today. I think I departed from ACTC for a hot second. I just want to take a look at the chart range really quick and just see what your opinion is on this. I have a range marked from daily or 4 hour, whatever you want to pull up, Chris. I have a range marked from $15 to $20. Does that look fairly like a kind of a fair assessment of what's going on right now?
Yeah. Right now, when you're looking at them, I think between $14 to $17 is a great entry point for them.
Yeah, this is actually in terms of my raw data, you know, not knowing anything about this company, when I pulled up these three charts, this daily chart was actually the more compelling of the two. I think the hard thing with these new acquisition companies is that there's not a lot of price action history, you know, so you're there's only so much analysis you can do in terms of charting. You know, a lot of it has to be fundamentals. And I mean, what would you say if you were to kind of rate how much you weight fundamentals and charting into each one of your investments? What would that be like, 50-50 or?
It'd be one of the largest weighing ones. It'd be, I think investing in chart analysis is the number one key to decide to invest into something. For SPACs, getting in right after the announcement is important, but you have to realize when to take profit and rotate because of how volatile SPACs are and how a lot of it is impatient retail investors that want to see the next big thing. They're going to, like, if you're not the most popular thing in the world, people are going to forget about you, but it's the way of the world. But just know when to get out, when to take some profits, scalp out, and then re-enter or add more at the point of the low support.
Right. So just to kind of clarify for anybody listening, it sounds like you're taking longer positions, and maybe you can specify kind of like how far you typically take an investment or a trade, that you're taking longer positions, but you're trading around a core. So is there a certain number of shares, for instance, if you're holding ACTC, are you holding kind of a core with the willingness to scalp as it fluctuates up and down?
Yes. So when it comes to like trying to make profit, short-term profit while being a long-term investor, I've said this on my live streams as well, is that if you're looking to make profit short-term, you think in your head how, like, what your strategy is, and say, how many shares do I want to have in this company for the long term and nothing less, and either double it or triple it. So at the initial, like, depending on the chart analysis, if it is at a support level, you buy double or triple amount of shares that you would want, and then write it up and slowly scalp out and take profits at 15%, 30%, 50%. And then where it's a point of, I am at the basis line of the amount of shares that I want long-term, you're good. And you let it ride. And then you can rotate those other shares and profits to others. So it's kind of like long-term investing while scalping as everything rides.
Right. I like that style for sure. I think I would personally get a little too bored. I think my strengths are in short-term swings for the most part, and I would get a little too bored if I wasn't able to scalp some of these dramatic moves that we're seeing in the market. So there's just so much opportunity to take profit in some of the long-term plays that I've been getting into lately, that it's always important to me to kind of identify what my core is before I enter a trade. Do you do that? Do you pre-plan, like, okay, I'm going to own 1,000 shares of this as a core, and then I'm just going to trade around. So you said, like, buying 2 to 3 times what you would want to buy. How does that work?
Yeah, 2 to 3 times more, because I if you really believe in the company, you want to grow with it overall, you should have that core amount of shares. You don't want to have 2 less, because then you're going to let your emotions play you, and you're going to be like, oh, I wish I had more. I'll buy more at this time. And then it goes down. And you're like, oh, crap. And now you're holding a bag. So right. You should always have that core amount that you want to have.
Yeah, I've been kind of talking to some friends in phase 1 as well about this lately. That I'm personally trying to focus more on reducing the number of positions I am in and increasing the weight of the position, because you really do, when your weight is increased, when your leverage is increased in terms of, you know, where you can shave out. You know, it's not a bad thing to shave out at, you know, 5-7% if something's moving slow, and you could just, if it's just moving slow across of a floor of a range, you know what I mean? There's a lot of different approaches, but you know, if you don't have a lot of money in your account, then you don't have a whole lot of leverage. So sometimes it's not easy to trade around the core. It really just depends on the cost of the stock. So
absolutely.
So yeah, 15 to 20 for ACTC, I really like, and I just like the position of it right now. Like, technically, I'm just keeping my eye on that bottom of that range. I just want to see maybe 1 or 2 more confirmation bounces. And so tomorrow I'm just going to follow it over the day and just see if it kind of holds up there. And if it does, you know, that's enough for me to assume we're at a bottom of the range. So I might be speculatively starting a position with this one. This is the one out of the three. What's your favorite out of the three that we just looked at, like, in terms of start position?
Start position?
Like, if for a speculative trader who's thinking about one of the three of these stocks, what do you think the best positioned one is right now for entry?
I think all three of them have good positions, but I think for the price, I think you kind of have them tied with NGA and ACTC right now, because they're so low. I do love the fact that we're seeing a breakout from a rival. So they're really, really close. I think NGA has a lot of special things towards it, because of it expanding internationally, as well as building out the battery plants. I don't know. I think for price wise, I think that you can load up at this very low price, because there has not been a breakout yet for neither NGA as well as ACTC. Yeah. And you can make a smaller position to arrival as they continue to make announcements.
Yeah. And ACTC really does look like it's just kind of sleeping right now. So
yeah,
if I were to take something like this, I would also just be stopping incredibly tight under like $15. I would just be out again if it couldn't hold. But for right now, I think these are great speculations for commercial EV. So definitely thank you for sharing your insight for these. I kind of wanted to just touch on just broadly what some of your goals are for this year. Are you making any personal progress, or are there any kind of hurdles that you need to jump over?
My goals is to continue to expand and teach retail investors the exact same things that I've been talking to for the last year, and trying to drive it into their heads. So not let emotions destroy them and drive them when it comes to investing. And my goal is to continue to expand out in YouTube and grow that out, as well as just continue to grow overall. I would like to do more giveaways for my following. I want to try to potentially do meetups. You never know, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think, again, like I said, the sky's the limit. I want to continue to expand as a brand, as a person overall, and profiting. I'm always profiting. I'm always growing my portfolio. And I'm just setting my family up for success, for college, for my daughter, for my real estate that I own. I'm just making it so I can provide the future for my family that I've never had as a kid.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And something I actually go to a lot when I'm kind of visualizing why am I trading? Like, what am I doing this for? One of the first things I go to is just, I want to take care of my family. Like I'm not a dad, but I just want my parents to retire and just be able to enjoy the rest of their lives. So that's something that really drives me as well. And I think it's important that, you know, no matter who you are, and it doesn't necessarily have to be family, but no matter who you are, it's important to really have those goals and values embedded in you while you're trading. It kind of helps you through the rough times, which actually brings me to my question of, you said your first year was a little bit rough. What was there a turning point? And also, I guess the same question goes for your social media. You said your social media following has really ramped up lately. Was there some sort of an inflection point that caused that?
Profiting overall at the beginning is when I stopped letting my emotions drive me. And I was always trying to follow someone else's, like as a sheep, I was trying to follow someone else's saying and trying to make money off of them and letting them, their indicators and alerts tell me when to invest. And I learned that that's not healthy. And you as an investor, you're not, or a trader, you're not growing. You're just focusing and relying on mommy and daddy to give you a direction. You yourself need to learn the indicators, the indicators of what to invest into. You need to find out chart analysis, and that's where I needed to learn. So I focused on the data. Yes, support levels are great, but chart analysis was something I had to learn throughout the whole first year with indicators. And then even with the success that I had, my next big learning experience was the Nikola situation, where I was invested into them, and I was able to interview the CEO and figure out the whole situation, and I got blinded by the business strategy. And then after that whole situation, I had to take a step back and refocus and be like, I'm never letting that ever happen again. So I refocused and relooked into the whole way of investing into a SPAC and investigating into a company. And that's where vertical integration became the biggest and most important aspect of investing into a company, not only EVs, but everything overall, network wise. And yeah, I've been successful ever since. Like, no matter what, I've always been successful since then.
That's actually, man, I hope people were listening to that breakdown, because there was a transformation that occurred there, you know, and I think a lot of people need to kind of go through the fire a little bit to identify what is working for their process or what is not. So it's almost like when you feel the heat after a bad trade or a trade or just due diligence that didn't go the right way. It's almost like, okay, I need to step back and take a look at, like you just said, you know, I need vertical for you personally, for instance, you need vertical integration to prove itself before it becomes a trade worth, you know, talking about. And I think that's really interesting. You expanded your filter set basically. And there, it sounds like you kind of got a little bit more narrow with what's acceptable to trade.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got more accepting, but it also fine pointed it. If you don't have vertical integrating, or you're not a disruptor, an innovator, you're not changing the sector, I don't see a value of investing into you. Hmm.
Okay. Well, I mean, and that's kind of the difference, I guess, between what people perceive as being an investor or a trader? Would you define yourself as one or the other at this point? Would you define yourself as an investor?
I am predominantly an investor with a swing trading side game. So yeah. I swing trade to make profit and grow my portfolio in a short term, but the majority of the foundation of my portfolio is long-term investing.
And in comparison to your first year and the volume of trading that you were involved in, it sounds like it might be a little bit less stressful to kind of take this approach.
Absolutely. It is 100% less stressful. Yeah. You don't rely on looking at your phone overall the whole time. You're not looking at the numbers going up and down and hoping that volume comes into play and hoping that it doesn't drop below that support level. You are fine with looking at the chart analysis, knowing the setup, looking at that it's either a symmetrical triangle, a bullish triangle setup, or a falling wedge, you name it. You have more confidence and you buy at the point where you are comfortable with, and you swing trade it or you long-term invest it, and you perfectly position yourself for the long-term.
Yeah, that's great. Great insight. Alex, we're getting close to an hour. I wanted to point out, because we had a fun connection before the show started. You live on the Florida coast, correct?
Yes, I am on the East Coast. Yes,
and we're both Alex and I are both apparently longboard surfers. So, how long have you been in the longboard game?
I've been longboarding, surfing, on and off prior to the military. And I have not been able to really surf that much since I've gotten out, but I've surfed for around 3 to 4 years prior to the military. And then I'm yearning to get back out there.
Yeah. It's an addiction for me. I'm actually in Golden, Colorado at the moment. This is where my work is. And I love it out here, but I'm starting to miss the ocean. So that I've been out here for 5 years now. And the ocean is really starting to call me again. So I might be down your way soon. You didn't happen to hear any explosions from from the Starship today, did you?
No, that's in Texas.
Okay, it was in Texas today.
Yeah, they're in Texas. And over on the East Coast, this is where the Falcon 9 launches are.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Is that offshore? When they do the Falcon, isn't that like an offshore?
They start off on land and then they do reentry on offshore off the coast of the Carolinas.
Do you get any kind of good views being on the coast?
I do. I see some amazing things, and you can actually hear the pulsating of the rockets hitting your chest.
Oh my gosh, that is awesome. I've never been to a launch, but that's a life goal. I've always wanted to be kind of like right at a launch just to feel it.
It's an experience. So you should definitely make your way out of there. Everyone, especially anyone that's listening, needs to come out and listen and see.
Very cool, man. Well, let's do a few Q&As before we jump off. I'm going to pick some stuff out here. I have the guy sending me some questions in the background. Let's see here. This is kind of just a baseline one, but why do you think it's important to invest?
It's important to invest so you can grow and create profits and let your money work for you. It's always fine to have a savings account and you have a certain amount of interest that grows, but why not learn how to do it and have the money in your own hands work for you? You can make that investment become from not only a 2 to 3% growth of steady growth for a year, or maybe not even steady growth, to potentially 150% to 200% in 1 year. I think that growing as an investor, as a person, you put your own profitability in your own hands.
Yeah, that is definitely how I'm going. I'm crossing my third year, and the sense of empowerment in terms of my own finances has grown exponentially year to year, the more I learn. So I've got another interesting one for you from this question is from MetaMarket. What's your biggest tip to making the transition from being an emotional trader investor to an analytical one? And before you even answer, I'm going to interject that I think it's really interesting, you know, what you were talking about with your radar, the meteorology, and how that kind of played into your analytical side. Mm-hmm. And my background is actually in art and design and art direction. So what got me into analysis was actually the visuals. I love the visuals of the chart, like drawing it out, like figuring out what the visual pattern was. So back to the question, what would you suggest is is a effective way to kind of make that transition, to start to part from your emotions while you're trading?
Number one is if you are bag holding, make a decision to filter out a little bit and then learn chart analysis. You need to learn chart analysis and learn the patterns, the bullish patterns, the bearish patterns, and know where the limits are. Like, find a way to learn support levels, which there are many ways. You can do Investopedia. You can follow, like, learn from your favorite investors like myself, or on Discord, or even like the Humble Trader, which is one of my favorites, that I learned a long time ago on YouTube. Learning on YouTube is a great way to do it. But taking out the emotions and being analytical is just focusing on the indicators, on the basics of analysis, and allowing those things to be the trigger for you to hit that button to buy.
Would you kind of equate being emotional with a lack of I'm drawing a blank here. I just think there's an aspect to the psychology as well. And I don't know if that's emotion or not in terms of your ability to, here's what I'm getting, ability to obey your own rules. Like when you set levels prior to a trade, I think that's where emotion really can catch you in the wrong places. When something, particularly, at least for me, when something fails after an entry and really just breaks support. And it usually happens immediately. And I know everybody out there listening has probably had this experience. Like right when you take a stock, sometimes it just eats it out of nowhere. So like when that happens, you know, I need to push my ego aside. I need to push my emotions aside. Mm-hmm. And that's where having that plan ahead of time really kicks in. And almost to the point where if I'm not in control of my emotions, or if I'm feeling a little bit out of sync in terms of my confidence in the moves that I'm making, I will literally, I know people don't like to do this, but I'll set physical stop losses from a discipline's perspective. Like if it goes lower than that, I'm out. Like yep. I'm not even questioning it. I'm sure you hear people say this a lot. It's actually a good question for you, but you know, do you set mental stop losses or physical ones? And if you don't feel like, or if I don't feel like I have the discipline and I'm a little emotional, like I will definitely set a physical stop loss just to protect myself.
I have mental and physical stop losses on swing trades. On long-term investments, I don't really have that situation. Mm-hmm. I don't have to. I think that the best way for investors to not get bitten by a swing trade is to have a trailing stop loss. Mm-hmm. So like a trailing percentage stop loss, which is one of the most effective ways to allow your stock to grow overall and allow it to wiggle. And then once it hits that spike, if it drops, your thing sells, and instead of saying that you lost 5%, you made approximately 45% while allowing it to grow and having that wiggle room. And I think that that's one of the most effective ways to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. When you talk about trailing stop too, just to quickly follow up on that, is there a general kind of, baseline for a trailing stop for you? 3%, you know, something like that. Like how do you determine?
Depends on the setup and the catalyst. I think that if you allow it to move 10%, that's the best way to do it, because you never know, especially with this kind of a market. I know that 10% is a lot, but to each his own. I think you can go 5%, you can go 8%, 10%, and allowing it to grow to potentially getting 15% spikes. And then once it pulls back to 10%, 150%, then drops 10% from that top, and you make profit.
Right. And I think that's just helpful for anybody listening that isn't really comfortable with or familiar with setting these limited stop loss. So it's really just about somewhere in the range of, and I agree with this, somewhere in the range of 5 to 10% is what I like to do when I'm trailing. So cool. Well, I've got two more for you, Alex, and then we're gonna call it a night. One from Lewis here. And he's just asking you if you have any tips for someone starting with a small account.
Absolutely. Number one tip: to not invest into too many stocks with a small stock. I've always preached diversity, but with a small portfolio that you're trying to grow in a short period of time, you should invest into two or three stocks at most, and pay attention to the indices, the analysis, and then if you do go into it, upon announcement, you should probably get in before it starts to gap up sharply. And then know when to take your profits. I think that whether it be a SPAC or a stock, if it goes up over 45 to 50% over a couple of days, you need to probably take some profits there.
Yeah, agreed. And I think one of the most important things for somebody that's new with a small account is really just use that as an opportunity to practice just abiding by your own risk reward ratios. And more importantly, to just know, like you were saying, know your acceptable levels in terms of support, resistance, and if something, you know the profit you want to take before you enter a trade. You know where those levels are, and that I think that really helps stave off some of the emotional outbursts that we could have as traders. I have one more for you, Alex. This is from Raging Bacon. He's asking, "What's up with the floating head?" I'm curious. I just looked up and I was, you know what? Your headshot reminds me of, it's like Zordon. A Queen poster, that old Queen poster where they're coming out of the black. I don't know if you know what I'm referencing, but
yeah. Yep. I love Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. I love that. And that was kind of like me. Just, I think that the old picture was a younger picture of mine. And I think that this picture, yeah, I'm not a mean guy in any shape or form. It just shows me at that point in time, it was me just getting a lot more serious and refocusing because I was just tired of, I don't know, just being looked at. Someone can just walk all over. So I refocused and I became very investigative and really not going to believe into a company just because I believe in the business strategy. It's kind of like a no BS type of profile.
Right. Gotcha. And I mean, it definitely, from what you just described, it's reflecting. So that's cool. I mean, I'm not going to mess with you. That's all I'm saying. but that's awesome, Alex. Listen, thank you so much for taking some time to just share your personal story with, and, you know, opinions on stocks, insights. We got a lot of great content from you tonight. So thank you so much for being here with us.
No problem. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for everyone that's watching, listening, and asking your questions. I know that there's a lot of them that have been asked, and I will probably comment below and answer you guys, but I really appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And before we cut off, everybody, you can follow Alex if you're not already following him on Twitter, and that's at AlexCutler247. 24/7 to follow more of his trading insights and opinions. And Alex, is there anything else you want to add in terms of social media for people to know about?
No, I'm on Twitter and I am on YouTube. I'm going to be expanding as much as I can, but those are the two I'll be focusing on.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much again. If you can find a recording of this podcast and many more of our past podcasts on our YouTube channel. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify now, so you can subscribe there. Our next episode is coming up April 13th. We are having a return guest this time from Laidback. We're going to get a second appearance from him. So don't forget to subscribe so you can get alerts when our next show is going live. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Best of luck trading and good night.